Hey everyone, and welcome. Thank you for joining me tonight. Let's go ahead and jump right in. I'd like to start out today by talking about what corporate America is pushing. Because I do think it's important, because it's what most normal people see fairly often. And you think you know what messages they're sending, you think they're just trying to sell you something and all of that, but there's more to it than that. And so I want to talk about a commercial put out by Twix, because what's interesting about this commercial is there's nothing really that commercial about it. I'm not going to show the whole commercial, even though it's 2 minutes long, 2.5 minutes long, which is pretty long for a commercial, right? I'm not going to show it in part because there are some people who've already had the videos taken down for copyright reasons, because Twix didn't like to be criticized. So that's part of it. It's also over 2 minutes long for this ridiculous commercial. But that's not the point. The point here is that you have Twix that is pushing so much like wrong all at once. All right, so in this commercial there's a little boy who dresses in a dress, because he wants to be a girl or something, and there is a witch that is his nanny who shows up, and the witch thinks it's wonderful that he's dressing in a dress, and then the witch kills a child who criticizes him for wearing a dress. Seriously, it's kind of funny almost that corporate America's like, this is the perfect story. The witch encouraging the little boy to dress in drag, and then the witch murders this small boy for saying boys don't wear dresses, which is seriously what happened. The boy, the supposed bully character, said boys don't wear dresses, and then the witch, conjures up some, demonic spell thing in order to cause like a massive wind, and then the child gets blown away and presumably dies. And then, the two degenerates in in this commercial, then go ahead and walk away. Let me just go ahead and show you this picture actually, because it's like, I think I have the picture. Okay, I do not have the picture. All right, in any case, it's a situation where it's like, the witch character has a dress on that is ridiculously short too, because it's like there is no limit to their attempts at sexualization. That's what they do. And so even when you look at this apart from the more obvious layers of kind of degeneracy, right? In the area of things like promoting trans to children, you're still looking at it as, well, there's this witch character who's wearing this like ridiculously short skirt that you just wouldn't wear around a child, like no decent person would. And this whole ad doesn't have any chocolate in it, doesn't have any candy in it whatsoever, none of that. It's just the whole thing is one propaganda piece. And I guess they kind of figured that incorporating a witch was somewhat Halloween based or something. But not really, because when you look at the commercial, they're like, well, we're just gonna wear the dresses year round, so it's not really dressing up, and it's actually just entirely normal, because that's the message that they're pushing. And it's like, well, corporate America is now responsible for pushing some of these messages onto an unwilling crowd. And I say an unwilling crowd because nobody signed up to receive that kind of messaging. Nobody wanted to hear that from Twix. Seriously, nobody wanted to hear that from Twix, and yet that's what you're being forced to watch. And then you have the incident of actually, there you go. And okay, so if you're watching this on screen, you can actually see just how short that skirt is, and that boy in the dress. It's like, I mean, seriously, I don't know who sees that and doesn't see a problem, but that's what they're promoting. And that's just corporate America for you, just trying to kind of push that on your kids, because they're not getting enough of it from, regular Hollywood or from academia at this point, from the media complex. Nope, Twix has to join in. And then at the same time, to kind of, well, show you the sort of world that our kids are being raised in now, you have incidents such as kids being taken to gay bars by school district. This was in the Broward County School District over in Florida. And it was over there in Broward that they decided that for the school trip with elementary school children, so young children, they would take them to this gay bar. And I've seen leftists say, it's not a gay bar, It's a gay restaurant, which is supposed to be, in some regard, somewhat better. And it's like, not really. But in any case, it's a gay bar that advertises itself as a gay bar and grill, and is on the top 15 list for the Broward County gay bars. So I'm going to go with gay bar. And, you know, when I was a kid, and there were school trips that were planned out, it was often to, like, the zoo or a museum or something to that effect that was in some way considered to be educational to some degree. And granted, I didn't go to elementary school in the United States, but I'm just going to say that I'm pretty sure that, you know, 20, 25 years ago, everyone would have found it rather odd that a gay bar would be considered as something to take elementary school kids to. In fact, a bar of any variety would be a kind of odd thing to take elementary school kids to. But you remember, this was the same crowd, the same LGBTQ, I don't remember all the other letters that they keep adding, but the same crowd there that just wanted marriage. All they wanted was to just love each other. And it was the evil bigots who were standing in the way and saying crazy stuff like, they want your kids, right? It was the bigots who were standing there saying, no, they're pedophiles and they want to sexualize your children. That was the bigots, or so you were told. And now here we are, and they're literally taking kids out of elementary school and taking them to gay bars. And there you go, and you can see the age of these kids up front. Fortunately, their faces aren't in the picture, but, you know, you look at this, and the whole bar is obviously themed in gay rainbow colors, and frankly, kids of this age shouldn't have any idea what it means to be homosexual. They shouldn't. They shouldn't have any idea what it means to be trans. They shouldn't have any idea about, you know, sexual topics, and if they do, something is probably wrong. And yet, the school system thinks that it's its job to introduce kids at that age. And when you do introduce kids at that age to what I'm just going to call, in the friendliest terms, to sexualization, right? Because we can argue about the homosexual angle of it, you know, of course. But when you simply introduce kids to sexualization at that age, you're grooming them, right? It's the process that pedophiles use in order to get kids to start thinking about sex so that they can better exploit them. That's what it's about. That's the process. That's what pedophiles do. And that's now what school systems do under the guise of saying, hey, we have to make these kids feel or be better people and be less bigoted. This is what we're told, that in order to make kids more open-minded, you have to sexualize them at perversely young ages. Let me get a drink and we'll continue. And you know, as you look around, this is something that you see in the United States, England, Canada, and Australia, which is, I think, the countries that most of you are from. As you look and you listen, the ages at what kids are being exposed to such things in the public schools is constantly dropping. Constantly. And nowadays, they literally teach about homosexual sex inside of schools. They didn't used to do that. And the age at which they're doing that is dropping and dropping. There is no age at which it seems to be too young for the people who are pushing this sort of perversity. And I think that says something, or at least it ought to say something to all of us. Because at a point where, you know, you look at a kid and say, well, there's no point at which we should preserve that kid's innocence. I think that says something about you as a human being, right? And we have... I'm trying to be careful here, but there's a connection between pedophilia and homosexuality. I've said this before. I make no apologies for it. And as you increase the acceptance of homosexuality inside of school systems, you're going to increase the rate at which people of those children get exposed to pedophiles. And it's not fair that the fact is that, frankly, if we're going to be a little bit candid here, that sexual assault causes people to be more likely to become homosexuals. It's, in the most crass terms, it's how homosexuals reproduce. It is. And it's not fair because it means that the person becomes a sort of manifestation of his abuse. And, you know, that's just what happens. And what we don't need to do is encourage more of that in a kind of cyclic nature. And that's what happens when you start teaching homosexuality inside of schools. And you start bringing in people to talk about these topics, to supposedly educate or indoctrinate or sexualize or groom, who are of that type. You know, who are homosexual or who have been, you know, assaulted when they were young and who would do the same to others, you know, and that's, it's incredibly dangerous and it's something we should all be looking out for. But instead, people are far too scared to touch any of these topics. I mean, and it's not surprising. I mean, you look at what big tech does, for example. Amazon took down the books that were being used by people who had homosexual ideation that they didn't want and that they wanted to get rid of. Amazon just banned them. Said, no, you can't have access to that information. Which is repugnant. And by repugnant, I mean the entire idea that you should have a company like Amazon that's stepping in saying, no, you don't have the right to access that information that you want because we, this grand corporation, have decided that certain knowledge is prohibitive, that certain knowledge is not allowed, that you're not adult enough or mature enough or intellectual enough to discern for yourself what you should have access to. And by doing so, they're condemning people to lives that are unfulfilling. I mean, I mean that in the most kind of basic way, because if you talk to anybody who has homosexual ideation that he doesn't want, and I have talked to such people, I mean, there's a certain part of misery and problem to that, because you have a person who, in the least sense, is going to have to say, okay, well, I don't have a way to make a child in this sort of relationship, and thus any relationship that I have will be unfulfilling. This doesn't seem healthy. The people that I'm around don't seem healthy. It's not a healthy lifestyle. It's, you know, actually a fairly disgusting lifestyle in some of the things that they actually do, if you really want to get down to it. I'm not going to elaborate any more than that. This is trying to be a family-friendly show. But in any case, I think that all of that needs to be said, and I think that not enough people are willing to say it. Okay. Anyway, Krista Espaval says, Milo says that very same thing. He does. And I think that anybody who suffers from that, and I will say suffers, because I think it's, it, you know, it is a type of suffering to have an attraction like that, that you can't control, for example. Anybody who suffers like that and is honest will tell you the same thing. Okay. All right, let's go ahead and move on, because I do want to talk about some news that has not been covered really anywhere major. It's not getting the appropriate coverage. So on October 23rd in Palmdale, California, there was an anti-vaccination mandate protest. In other words, there was a protest against vaccination mandates. All right, and somebody, an older guy, 64 years old, his name is William Aslickson, got into an argument with some of these protesters. He went up and he started to kind of start something about it because he wasn't happy with the people protesting. And then he got into his vehicle, his Jeep, and then he ran the Jeep into the crowd of people who were protesting against vaccination mandates. Now, a woman was apparently injured and taken to the hospital. He was arrested about 90 minutes later and charged and held under a $50,000 bond. Now, the thing is, I haven't seen any real coverage of this. And do you remember Charlottesville? Because I do. Seriously, that was a topic. Sorry, that was something that got a lot of coverage when it was reported that, I mean, I'm just going to say how it was reported that a white nationalist ran his vehicle into a crowd of supposed anti-fascists. I know there's a lot about that topic, but in any case, that was how it was covered. That's how it was kind of drilled into everyone's heads. And therefore, you know, but in this case, you have somebody who did that. He got into his Jeep after confronting these people on foot. He got into his Jeep, and then he ran a vehicle into them. But because they are opposed to vaccination mandates, that is the people protesting, their lives have less value. And you see that in the news coverage. You see that because this hasn't been on TV, right? It hasn't got any real news coverage. Yes, if you, you know, if you look it up specifically, you know, somewhere on a search engine, you will find buried articles at the major networks. But most people don't know this happened. You can't just turn on the TV or open the newspaper and hear about this. The name of the victim will never be, you know, have major public coverage. The name of the perpetrator will never have major public coverage. Why? Because of the motivations of both the victim and the attacker. The attacker is a good guy in the eyes of our media, in the eyes of this kind of propaganda network in which we live, right? Because he's the guy who was running over the anti-vaxxers by the new definition, because the new definition of anti-vaxxer, as was changed just a couple of years ago, interestingly enough, is anybody who opposes mandated vaccines, which is fascinating. But yeah, this guy actually literally aimed at people and hit some and seriously injured a woman. And yet, it's not mainstream news. Now why is that? I mean, I realize that I'm talking to the choir to some degree, that a lot of you understand, but I think it's important to be aware of what is not covered when people turn into the mainstream news, because there are a lot of people who tune into this show in order to kind of figure out what that is. You know, what's going on that isn't being covered. But it's like, if you turn on the TV, you can't just read between the lines. And that's why I tell people all the time, because there are people who are like, well, I'm aware that the media is slanted, but I figure out what it is that's really going on from watching, you know, the TV. It's like, no, you don't, because they don't even cover these stories. They literally just don't even cover. Through omission, they manipulate. You know, they do their propaganda through omission. Okay, hold on. Okay, and yeah, I see Susan in the comments saying, I didn't hear about this till now. It's not surprising. It wasn't given coverage. You know, the life of the woman who was hit by the Jeep didn't matter in the world of our media. Okay, let's go ahead and move on. Because Rachel Levine, I mean, honestly, it's ludicrous to call him that. That's his public name, is Rachel Levine. You know, our health whiz in government has been named a 4-star admiral now. Its real name is Richard, okay? I hate playing these games. Its real name is Richard, but it dresses as a woman and calls itself Rachel, and the media proclaims that he is a she, and the government proclaims that he is a she, and so we're supposed to play the game. Well, he was appointed to lead the U.S. Public Health Service Commissioned Corps, which is, yeah, becoming the nation's first, now, depends where you look, is it the nation's first openly transgender 4-star officer, or is it the nation's first female 4-star officer? I mean, it just becomes kind of funny after a while. I mean, maybe it shouldn't, because there's some woman out there who eventually will get, you know, the nomination and become like the 4-star officer who's actually a woman, and then nobody will be able to say so, and she won't either, because she'll be like, well, you know, I would have been the first, but there was this guy, and so now not so much, right? Because, I mean, you see what I'm saying? I mean, it would be really kind of awkward to be that woman who finally gets into this position, knows that she actually is the first in that particular position, and for whatever reason, takes some degree of pride in that fact, and then has to stay entirely silent about the guy who got there first, who was pretending to be a woman. That's just kind of, yeah, all right. Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and let's go ahead and move on. I want to talk about New Zealand, because New Zealand is a country that took this kind of COVID tyranny to its kind of maximum heights as fast as possible. I mean, Australia's been trying, but New Zealand, I feel for the people who live there. And the Prime Minister of New Zealand was recently asked by a journalist about how she seems to be treating the vaccinated versus the unvaccinated like two different kind of classes of people, like one with rights and one without. And the journalist seems to be expecting her to kind of retort like a politician, like, no, that's not exactly what I'm doing. I've got these, you know, everyone has the same value. And instead she doesn't. She instead embraces it. And so I actually want to show you this video, and I'm hoping it works. We haven't done this in quite a while. But in any case, I would like to show this to you. So let's see.
So you basically said this is going to be like, well, it's almost like you probably don't see it like this, the two different classes of people. If you're vaccinated or if you're unvaccinated, you have all these rights. If you are vaccinated...
That is what it is. So, yep. Yep.
Yeah. So that's exactly it. I mean, I watched that a few times because it was like, wow, you know, that's quite something to have a political figure like that. And I can't imagine being someone who kind of lives under her. And you do, like, if you live in New Zealand, you live kind of under her wrath, sort of, right? She's the leader of the country, acting in a dictatorial manner, deciding that half of the people basically don't have rights, that they're lesser human beings because they refuse to comply. Which, I mean, I just think everyone ought to watch that and listen to that and be horrified. And yet increasingly, it seems that people aren't. And increasingly I see in the United States, amongst the American left most especially, I see this promotion of something similar here. And of course it's happening already to some degree in places like New York, right? Where you have the vaccine pass rollout, where restaurants aren't supposed to let people in who are unvaccinated. So you already have a kind of two-tier system propping up in some of the strongest leftist regions in the United States. You don't have it on the national level yet, and you don't have politicians talking quite as flamboyantly yet. But it's coming, and it's getting worse. Travis says, how do we fix this? Well, at this point, it's kind of difficult to fix, because the trouble is that the tyrants who are making these policies have been kind of pushing the line for a year and a half, going on 2 years at this point. They've been trying to see how much people will tolerate, right? And the original test was if they could get everyone to just agree to 14 days, a suspension of their rights and freedoms for 14 days, right? That was the original. And by and large, most people, it would seem, said, okay, 14 days will flatten the curve and everything will be all right and we'll go back to normal. And instead, because the tyrants that were in power saw that everyone was like, okay, we'll give you this power, then the 14 days got longer and longer and became more extreme, because suddenly churches weren't allowed to open, right? And suddenly small businesses had to close because they just didn't have enough space, you see. So only the big stores could open. And it expanded and expanded to the point where that they keep pushing the tyranny and nobody wants to really do anything about it because it doesn't seem like it's enough of a difference from what happened last week. And that's kind of what happens in the tyrannical regimes, is that nobody wants to speak up or act up enough because what little step has been taken this week to eradicate that little piece of your freedom isn't that much, that far removed from what happened last week or from the week before, because it's really gradual, right? There's no massive, oh, you're under martial law, that's it, everything's gone. Instead, it's slow. And they do that to try and make sure that people don't take action against them of any type. And before you know it, you're living in an absolute dystopia. And that's where we're going. So, yeah, I mean, I think that people should stop complying with illegal and unethical mandates that run afoul of a recognition that individuals have basic human rights that are given to them by God and can't be taken away by a government bureaucrat, regardless of what he or she says. That's what I think. All right, let me get a drink and then we'll move on. I also think, I was going to move on, but I also think that it's important to recognize that there are people who are protesting en masse, and the truth of the fact that those protests are happening isn't really getting out the way that it should. And that's very intentional. It's due to an alliance between the mainstream media and the government, or governments at this point. And so you have to kind of pay attention to the fact that, you know, if there are protests that are happening, for example, around you, maybe join in and that kind of thing, because it's like, and actually get the word out about what's happening in your area. It kind of goes with the whole thing about how you need to start forming communities and forming networks and figuring out what people around you are decent, who you could work with if things continue to get worse. Part of that is just kind of trying to get the word out about just how bad things are and about any sort of protests that are going on against the encroaching tyranny, right? Whether it's like GE workers who are walking out to protest, or pilots that are, you know, walking out to protest, and people at United and all this stuff. Of course, in France, there have been some pretty massive protests too. Obviously, that's a little further away. But these things are happening, and the media is ignoring it, and the media is ignoring it for a very specific reason, because they want to prevent momentum. Because they know that if you have protests that are going on right around the country, and then word gets out that, oh, look, we're not alone. That's the worst thing for them. The idea that you can recognize that you're not alone, that instead, that there are hundreds and thousands of, actually millions of Americans, for example, just to stick this in America right now, that feel exactly like you do. Because instead, if you're alone, you're kind of dispirited and you don't feel like you can have a real impact. And because of that, people become quiet. This is why they do social media shadow banning. It's the same thing. It's to make you feel like there is nobody else out there who agrees with you. That's the whole point. It's a big manipulation effort. And that's why they don't want to draw your eye to any other protests that are happening near you or even throughout the country. It's because they want you to feel like you're entirely alone and you're entirely impotent and you don't have any power. They know that instead, if you realize just how many millions of Americans felt exactly as you do and were trying to speak up and were trying to fight back, that that would catch on, that it would build momentum, and that it would result in real change. All right. Okay, I'm gonna continue. I can see you guys obviously agree on that point. There's I will also say that let's get some good news for a bit, because there was actually one victory. It was in North Carolina and like the four entire states. There is a massive healthcare conglomerate called Novant Health, and Novant Health is the kind of typical faceless medical bureaucracy, right, that you can think of. And again, they span four states. And they had one guy who was employed by them, who was the senior vice president of marketing and communications. His name was David Duval. David Duval was apparently fired for being a white male. He was fired because Novant Health decided that they wanted to become more diverse. And to become more diverse, they fired him and replaced his job with the job with two women, one white and one black, and got rid of him. There had never been any complaint against his work. The women with whom he was replaced were apparently no more qualified than he was. In fact, they were less qualified. You could argue, in fact, that they were much less qualified if, in fact, they needed two people to replace one. I mean, that's just some math for you. In any case, he ended up suing. And what's surprising about the whole thing is that he won. Yes, a jury awarded him $10 million in a discrimination lawsuit because he was fired, and the jury agreed that he was fired for being a white male. And you can't actually fire somebody for racial reasons in this country. Now, this is quite a story because, look, I know that this happens all the time. I know, and I imagine you know, that there are lots of different major corporations that fire people, and also refuse to hire them. I think that's a lot more common, but that also fire people for hurting their quotas, because in part because their quotas are changed or inspired by government money. I mean, that happens too, right? If your company is like more than 51%. minority, because it's not a minority at that point, but in any case, then suddenly you're eligible for more grants, for example. That kind of thing incentivizes companies to treat white males most especially as worse, as lesser humans. And so it ends up manifesting in things like this happening. Of course, the companies aren't supposed to be so honest about it, or at least so open about it. The guy knew that he was fired for being a white male. Novant Health said that's not why he was fired, of course, which is what you might expect. And I'm only reporting this as that being the reason because the jury said so. All right. But after Novant said that they didn't fire him for being a white man, but rather they could just get other people who were better, you know, of course. The company then said that it's one of thousands of organizations to implement diversity and inclusion programs throughout the United States. That's kind of interesting. Because why would their diversity and inclusion program have any bearing upon this guy's firing if that wasn't why he was fired? You know, it's kind of like putting their own foot in their mouth at that point. But the whole thing with the diversity and inclusion programs, I really don't think there should be them. I don't. The whole idea of hiring people because they're diverse, if we have to use the term as a euphemism for non-white, is repugnant. It's like if you hire a person based upon what he can do and, you know, let the cards fall where they may at that point, it's really immoral to do anything else. And it's also bad for your company, right? It's bad for your company if you're hiring people on the basis of anything other than what they could do. On the basis of anything other than merit, it doesn't make any sense. And yet companies do this. Why? Well, those grants come in various areas. And also they can kind of brag because that's like modern virtue signaling is that way, right? It's, well, we're a very diverse company. And yes, sexual orientation is based upon it, is part of this too. And I think it was NASDAQ, you know, the stock exchange. I think it's the third largest stock exchange, or the second, I'm not sure. But in any case, NASDAQ was trying to require that companies have a certain diversity on their boards, including that a person be from the LGBT community. Read that as you want. And also that people be non-white. This is their definition of diversity. The SEC accepted that and now is being sued. So that happens too. But the thing is, I don't think people realize just kind of how big it is amongst America's biggest corporations. Novant Health is a pretty massive conglomerate in that area of the country. And finally, a jury actually ruled in this guy's favor. And that's the part that surprises me. I mean, in a good way, I'm surprised that in this day and age that it went in that direction, because it has gotten to a point where societally there's kind of an acceptance that discrimination against a white straight male is perfectly acceptable, and that basically you can't have racism toward him. Right? That's the way that it's been. John Cox says diversity is a buzzword for anything but white. Well, exactly. I mean, I like I was saying, it's just a euphemism. That's all it means. It doesn't mean diverse. You can have in corporate America an all black team and they'll call it diverse. It's like that's not what diverse actually means, but it is to them, because to them it just means non-white. That's exactly what it means. things are manufactured abroad to enrich other countries at our expense, so you may thank Bill Clinton for that, along with H.W. Bush. Yes, although a lot of different presidents who've worked against American interests, but Bill Clinton is the one who first let China, for example, into the World Trade Organization after they helped to fund his campaign. Nowadays we talk about foreign interference in our elections, but it was pretty clear in that particular case. They helped with both of Bill Clinton's campaigns, especially the second one. Anyway... All right, so one of the kind of bigger news stories that's going around now, and should be, is the fact that the United States government is considering payouts of $450,000 per person that was affected by the Trump administration's zero tolerance policy in 2018. So that is, those who came here illegally to cross the United States border, and then their families were separated because, you know, the Trump administration was actually trying to protect children from the sex traffickers that were bringing the children and pretending like they were family members even though they weren't. Well, now the US government is going to pay those people who drug their children starving across the desert. And that's going to do nothing other than encourage more of that to happen, naturally. But seriously, we're talking about payouts of $450,000 per person as a reward for these people having broken American law, you know, by entering the country illegally and hopping across the border. This is a response to a lawsuit by the ACLU. Now, the ACLU, you know, went and complained about how, well, these children are traumatized by the experience. And I'm like, of course they are. I mean, their entire lives were upended. Whatever lives they had were entirely upended. Their parents decided to take them, using coyotes and all kinds of crap, to get through this desert, threw their lives into disorder, and then they were, you know, had to be held inside of a center, away from their parents because we didn't even know that they were their parents. Of course it was a traumatic experience, but whose fault was that? I mean, seriously, what parent would take their child in that kind of circumstance, and what kind of person would expect that the child would get through that without some degree of trauma? I mean, seriously, for a kid, I mean, that's massive. You're entirely upending their lives. You're exposing them to a profound risk of death. And death through things like starvation and thirst, not to mention the risk from the other sex, from the actual sex traffickers that are out there. You know, it's not exactly a safe place to go, you know, traveling with your kids across the border. That's not how it works. Yes, of course these people are traumatized. That doesn't mean that it's the fault of the United States taxpayer. In fact, what Obama recommended was to separate them when they got here and for us to kind of take care of the kids separate from the so-called parent which may not have been, and that in doing so you would also deter this from happening, and that when you found out that they were with their actual parents, then you sent them both back together. That was Obama's policy that was taken up by the Trump administration, and honestly it was a good policy that made sense and was decent. And by giving them $450,000 of US taxpayer money, what does that do other than encourage more bad parents to drag their children, you know, their emaciated, dehydrated children across the Mexican desert? That's exactly what it does. That's the immorality. You know, doing that to your kid. And then the guy, what was his name? Lee Gelernt, who's the deputy director of the ACLU's Immigrant Rights Project, says that the remedy for this moral vacuousness of the Trump administration must include not only meaningful monetary compensation, but a pathway to remain in the country. So your tax money goes $450,000 a person, so potentially, you know, quite easily over $1 million per family, maybe closer to two. And then, after we give them $2 million a family, let's say, then they also get to remain in the country as a reward for the fact that they broke the law to enter the country. Like, I don't usually talk about immigration topics that much, but my gosh, this is just so audacious. I mean, the money that the government is thinking about giving these families is money that it is taken by force from Americans, because that's what taxation is, right? You don't pay your taxes because you love the government so much. You pay your taxes because you're afraid that if you don't, U.S. Marshals will show up at your door. That's why everyone pays the income tax. So, the money that the government has is money that was taken from you by force. Now, recognizing that, the government is going to take that money that it took from you by force, that you worked for, and give it to some people who broke the law, and in so doing endangered their families, endangered their children. And because they endangered their children, and because they traumatized their children, for those specific reasons, we're going to justify giving them money to do so. And we're going to encourage other people to make exactly the same hazardous trip in the future. I mean, it's just so appalling. No, I do not plan on running for office. I appreciate your support in my so doing, but no. I think that actually I can make far more of an impact from talking to real people like you guys about these issues than I could do inside of the cesspit that is the political system of our day. And that's even assuming that you had a fair voting system, which I don't presume is the case. But thank you, seriously. It's very flattering to think that somebody would want me to represent them. Okay. Hold on. But yeah, it's an immense amount of money that we're promising to people for breaking the law, as a reward for their criminality, and a reward for their indecency in doing what they did. Because honestly, when you think about something like that, I think it's indecent to do that to your children. Oh, and thank you to Rob Knorr for the mention. I appreciate it. Rob has a great channel, and I'm a big fan of his, and I plan to do a video with him again soon. So, thanks, Rob. That's, by the way, if you're looking Rob Knorr up, his last name is spelled N-O-E-R-R. All right, anyway, let's move on. Andrew Cuomo was charged with a sex crime. This has been all over the news today. And it's a misdemeanor because he apparently put his hand up a woman's blouse and touched her breast. All right. Now, the thing is, the victim in this lawsuit, criminal filing, wasn't named, which is normally the case, but it matches a description of a woman who has come forward publicly and made the same allegation. The thing is, I'm just going to be honest here. I won't lie in order to, you know, get political points. It's not the way that I work. I'm always honest with you about, you know, it's just wrong. So I've seen these pictures of Cuomo with this woman, and they look like a couple. And you can look them up yourself, but they kind of lean into each other and act like they have something. And now she's all like, well, he assaulted me and touched my breast. And it's like, okay, maybe. Maybe it was kind of she regretted it afterwards. I don't know. But I'm not just going to kind of jump on the whole thing. I will say that I think that the real crime here is being ignored. I mean, it's like this, okay? He won an Emmy. Andrew Cuomo did, for his COVID-19 briefings. They gave him an Emmy for that, but he lost the Emmy due to some public accusations of sexual impropriety against him. But think about how he handled the COVID, should we call it an epidemic, really? I mean, okay. Think about how he handled that, right? We knew that like everything, like every flu even, that it affects people who are elderly more than anybody else, that they're at the greatest risk. And his office put policies in place that we now know, according to official government documents, led to thousands of deaths that would not have happened because he intentionally placed the elderly in the greatest risk. We know that he forced sick people into the nursing homes and out of hospitals. We know this happened. But this, that's not what's being talked about. I mean, it just seems a little trivial to talk about this topic of him touching a woman's breast when his policies were responsible, according to official documents, for thousands of deaths of the elderly, and he's never been held responsible for that. And why do you think that there's a difference in the way that these two things are handled? Because I have my reasons. I have my suspicions. And I'll just go ahead and tell you what I think it is. I think the whole thing is they want to get rid of him. The Democrats want to remove him as an ally and get rid of him for something that only he is responsible for, i.e. some kind of sexual impropriety. And that's why this is the focus. But what they really want to do in so doing, is offset their own responsibility. Because remember, those decisions that he made, that his office made, they weren't in a vacuum. The decisions that he made in regards to COVID, in regards to putting elderly people back into nursing homes, were applauded by the entire Democrat circus. They all told us what a great job he was doing. And he didn't do it alone. You know, all of his peons worked together to make that happen. And he wrote a book applauding himself and all the different Democrat allies that worked together to make that happen. Imagine being one of the people, by the way, who lost an elderly relative up there in New York. And then Cuomo wrote a book about his own leadership skills in handling it. This is the left disowning him in order to neuter their own damage, because this is the kind of thing that would be brought up in an election, for example. So they want to get rid of him. But not for that, because they don't want to draw attention to the fact that the mismanagement is responsible for a lot of the deaths. Because they don't want to say that. No, they've got other mantras to regurgitate when it comes to handling the virus. And that's not, oh, our mismanagement might have led to thousands or perhaps tens of thousands of deaths. They don't ever want to say that. They don't ever want to point to their own ineptitude and say, oh, actually, maybe regular people knew better. Maybe regular people knew what their own families needed. And they did, by the way. But instead, you know, you've got these Democrats in office who are like, well, you know, we'll go ahead and get rid of Cuomo because he touched some women. Maybe he did. Maybe he didn't. I don't know. He hasn't been found guilty. But I think it all seems so convenient that instead the attention is drawn to these accusations. And this is like one of the most severe, and that's why I think he's been charged with this one. And if convicted as charged, despite being a misdemeanor, he'd still be required to register as a sex offender and all of that. And it does come with some jail time, depending, of course, on how they handle it when it comes down to sentencing. But again, I mean, it seemed a little odd. It's like, you know, it's like this. From where I'm sitting, it's like you touch someone's breast and you go to jail, but you kill thousands of people and you win an Emmy. I mean, that's what it seems. That's what it seems like for me. Let's see. Navajo Red Pill says, also regarding your opening topic, that's all part of the demoralization of westernized free world nations. The communists said they'd take down the US without ever firing a shot. Well, yeah, I mean, I can't argue with any of that. And I mean, if you look at it, the US and the rest of the what remains of the West is being demoralized. And I hate to say that, because I try and make this more of an uplifting show. We try and joke and have fun. And my audience, I'm very blessed to have a very good audience. I really do like you guys. But I will admit that things look dark when it comes to the status of the West. And I think that, if I may, that there's kind of a religious connotation to that. I think that as we become more secularized, we also become more communistic, because you kind of seek that. And by you, I mean like it's part of the human condition to seek some kind of centralized figure upon whom you can rely, who will provide for you, and that kind of thing. And in the Christian societies of the past, you've had, well, God will provide for me, right? And yet, in communistic societies, it's the state will provide for me, the state will do everything, and everything will be perfect, and we'll strive for some kind of utopia, and we'll get there. But it's the same thing, and as you have society that leans more secular and away from religiosity and from Christianity, the people start seeking that kind of assurance that they once found in God. They seek it somewhere else, and the government will step in. You know, if you give them the power, they will step in and say, we will fix all of your problems, just give us absolute power over everything in your life. And that's what people have been doing. And because of that, and again, this is like an international thing, different nations at different speeds, but that's what's been happening. And it's catastrophic for the West. And I think that you're going to have a sharp decline in what's left of our nations before you have something that's better, that kind of rises from the ashes, actually. That's what I think is going to happen. Speaking of the history of the West, there's a you may not be familiar with the Imperial College of London. It's a pretty famous place, and due to the Black Lives Matter riots, I'm not going to call them protests, there was this group of 21 academics at the Imperial College who were put together to kind of figure out what it was in this college that needed to be fixed, what it was that might be offensive to, say, Black Lives Matter. And so this group has been working hard to figure out what problems they can find and create, because that's what they do, they create problems. And they've decided that they have to get rid of the bust of a slavery abolitionist, which I find particularly amusing, a guy named Thomas Henry Huxley. They've decided that the bust of him, you know, has to be removed. And also there's the Huxley building on campus, which has to be renamed. And you might think, well, why? Because, you know, slavery is bad and slavery is white supremacy and all of this stuff, which is what they're taught in colleges. But you see, he wasn't pure, not by leftist standards, you see. Huxley also helped to form Charles Darwin's theory of evolution, and part of Charles Darwin's theory of evolution encompassed some conversations about IQ and race, their connection, and also about racial hierarchies. And these are conversations that nowadays we can't have. It's certainly conversations that wouldn't happen within a sort of academic setting. Not a chance. But at that particular time, it was considered fine to have that conversation. And, you know, the truth would be wherever it was. And of course, it would be difficult to have a conversation about evolution without a topic of how different races were different. And I don't believe in evolution, right? I'm a Christian. But in any case, that tied in, as later did, it kind of tied into the eugenics conversation as well. This is part of history. But there is no historical figure that will stand up to the scrutiny of leftist lure, right? A law. So they're going to get rid of him. And in its final report of this group of 21 supposed academics that was published recently, it said that they're going to have to change 3 buildings on campus, and these lecture rooms that were named after different influential figures should be removed, renamed rather, and they should remove 2 different statues. And then the Imperial College's president, Alice Gast, said, and I quote, "While we cannot change history, we can find ways to clarify what it means, learn lessons from it, and ensure that we are not perpetuating legacies that we find abhorrent," unquote. All right. Now, the thing is, she's saying, while we can't change history, we can clarify what it means. And I have to ask, how does that relate to removing the busts of people who made that history? Because I don't even like the Huxley guy, but I don't see any, I don't see how you clarify what history means or learn lessons from history by removing the figures that were in it, or by removing access to the lessons that they learned, or removing any sort of semblance or resemblance or anything to historical figures of the past. Because that's what we're talking about. I mean, in the bluntest terms, you're talking about completely vanquishing history. Under the guise of learning from history, and that's fascinating to me. Because, like, you can't learn from the history that you don't see, that you can't read, that you can't have any knowledge of, right? Because that's the whole point of naming a building after it, right? It's the whole point of having the bust. It's a reminder, this guy existed and he did something. Remember that. Remember that person. Or what he learned, or whatever. But instead they say, no, that's not how we remember and learn from history. We do it by looking the other way. And, I don't think that's how you learn from history. If there's anything to be learned from that guy, then no. They're not going to learn it now that they no longer remember who he is. Effectively, you know, future generations wouldn't if they had their way, because that's the whole point when you remove any indicators that the person lived, you're trying to kind of eliminate their history, eliminate their personhood. That's what's happening. Tying Agreement says, erasing history has the intent of destroying Western culture. Yes. I can't disagree with that. it certainly seems that, you know, when you listen to modern academics, they'll tell you that basically the West has no culture. And at the same time, they will work overtime to eliminate the things that gave the West culture. And that's what you kind of see happening here. And I've seen it. What's also interesting, though, is that they'll get rid of the things that are offensive about other cultures. And I mean, I covered, I think it was maybe a year ago now, but there were these shrunken heads that were removed from a different museum over in England. And the shrunken heads were something that the South Americans used to do, where they actually took a skull and then they scalped it and then they like boiled it, if I remember correctly. And they ended up with this, like skin thing that was made from the person's, you know, flesh from around the skull. And they used to hang it around their necks, like these Incas and stuff. And there's this museum over in Britain used to kind of have a couple of those called the Shrunken Heads. You can look this up and provide them and be like, well, look at the savagery kind of thing. This was what happened over there. And then people got upset about that too, because you can't point to that history and, you know, display it in all of its kind of barbarity and all of its savagery. Because some people might look and say, oh, wow, those South American tribes, they were savage, right? Instead, they have to kind of promote this narrative that all cultures are beautiful. And turns out that they're actually not. And so, you know, it's like they're kind of getting rid of some of the best figures from Western civilization's history. I mean, not necessarily that Huxley is one of them, but rather that, you know, different influential figures that kind of created the Western world over time, that created different progressions. They're eliminating those. Then at the same time, they're removing all the kind of most negative pieces of other cultures that we might consider to be savage in one way or five. Sorry, I'm losing my voice already. I have to slow down. Yeah, Chris said, I saw some shrunken heads at the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum in Niagara, Canada. Yeah, they're kind of creepy. I'm pretty sure it's the skin that they take off the skull and then they boil it down. And they do other stuff to it and it's really creepy. But they held them like little... They put them around their necks and just traveled with them like they were victories. Like victory trophies, kind of like that. Which you might consider to be warped and like a horrendous sign of what they saw about the sanctity of human life in a godless society. That's what some people might come to the conclusion of, but you're not allowed to get any of that. Krista Espoval, those are mostly peaceful beheadings and head shrinking. Yeah, exactly, right? I mean, you're supposed to look at that. And don't get me wrong, it's like, there have been bad white cultures too. You know, I don't point back at the Druids and say, hey, weren't they awesome? But nobody does, that's the thing. But there are people who point back to the Incas and the Aztecs and are like, wow, wasn't that great culture before Whitey came along? And I'm just like, hold on a minute. Can we just take a couple of steps back? Because, you know, you give those people a spoon and they'll just kind of dig out a heart. Okay, anyway, getting a little carried away, but you do know what I'm saying here. Anyway, let's go ahead and move on that note. I did see on, this was broadcast over at the BBC, there's this woman, Joanna Lumley, and she's an actress who, if you haven't watched British TV, you probably are unfamiliar with, which is fine. But she called for wartime rationing to stop climate change. And I thought that was honest. Really, really honest. You don't see that much. Like you'll see various different things about what we need to do about climate change and how it's a super crisis, but let's not do too much. Just do a little bit. Let's just virtue signal a bit. Let's just buy some Teslas and everything will be fine. And then you've got somebody who's just a little bit, you know, more honest. And she's like, no, what we need is restrictions on meat. And it's like, okay, so this is where they're really going. And it's true, because you have heard, if you've been paying attention at least, them talk about how people need to learn to survive on bugs, right? That's the kind of thing that has made waves on the internet, especially. But really, they do want to promote this kind of idea of, well, we can't eat cows. Cows are bad. We're going to have restrictions on what food you can get. And increasingly, that'll be so easy because there's not going to be much more food on the shelves, it would seem, due to the shortages that have been created. But she was promoting this, and they were acting, the people that she was there with at the BBC, were acting like this was an entirely rational idea, that we should put restrictions on meat and air travel in order that, you know, you can actually trade the fact that you don't travel in exchange for having some access to food. That was her idea. And you combine that with a sort of two-tier system that's being advocated for the vaccinated versus the unvaccinated, and I can see a kind of future developing where it's like, well, you know, you get the vaccine and you get a little bit more meat, maybe. You know, yeah, I shouldn't laugh because, I mean, that's where we're going. But in any case, yeah, and this is a woman who has apparently a net worth of $25 million. She's over 70 years old. So yeah, she's honest about what she thinks should be done. But it also means that it's something that she's advocating for that she will never live under. Right? Because she won't. And it's easy to advocate for that which you won't live under. Because if you've got $25 million, you're never going to be without a steak, if you really want one, right? But I think it's important to draw attention to this because increasingly this is what we're being told, right? You just need to live in a pod and you just need to eat the bugs. And it's cool to eat the bugs, they promise. That's what we're told. You know, it's hip. You should try it sometime. And there are these different articles at places like Ceylon and so on that are like, well, you should try these kind of more mystery and exotic foods. And they try and, like, you know, tell you that barbecued rat is some kind of exotic food. And it's like, no, that's not what I call exotic. Yeah, it's like, well, because what they really want to do is kind of rewind time to before the Industrial Revolution, right? Because from their perspective, right, from their perspective, the Industrial Revolution is a kind of grandiose sin against everything that they believe. Because it was the using of oil and petrol and plastics in some cases eventually to create the West, to create the industrialized society that now, as far as they're concerned, pollutes the world, or nature, or Gaia, or whatever the heck they want to call it, you know, from one day to the next. That's what they think. So to them, civilization itself is the problem. Because when you look at, you know, post the Industrialized Revolution, you tend to think of everything that you think of as being more civilized, right? Everything down to your fridge and your modern toilet system, your accessibility of food that's driven around country long distance and in many cases around the world through planes and through trucks and through massive ships, all of these things that make up what you consider to be the civilized world that you have a sense of expectation for, all of those things are the things that they think are problematic and which they want to reverse. They don't think they have the power to do so all at once, but, you know, like with your freedoms, you know, with the case of the COVID thing, they'll just keep pushing and pushing. And they're like, well, eventually someone's going to come along and say, well, we're going to go ahead and put some quotas in place. And maybe it won't be so hard for you to accept the quotas, you know, that are in place when they seem pretty big at first. Like, well, I don't see why I'd ever use more than that. In any case, that's how they'll start out. Like, well, I just don't use that much meat, so it's not that big of a deal to me. And anyway, the stores aren't that stocked. And that's how it'll start. And they'll just start reducing it and reducing it. Yeah, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy, exactly. James Cresswell says, here's the thing, we can start a country in the country where we actually follow the Constitution. Imagine that going along with the document that rules your nation, a revolutionary idea. It didn't last for long, it would seem, did it? but at the moment, I mean, I sort of agree. I sort of agree that the solution for most people right now is to do some stocking up as much as possible, you know, to kind of make sure that you have the things that you need for your family, considering that prices are going up and so on. And there legitimately is some issues with getting access to things like food and ammo and so on. So some of that, you know, and at the same time making connections with other good people that are in your community. You know, you might find a church that's good for that, maybe, I don't know, you might find some kind of volunteer opportunities where you find good people. Finding good people is hard, I know. Maybe you have neighbors that are decent. Whatever it is, or wherever they are, I think that the kind of start to protecting yourself in the coming society is creating the network that your family will need to rely on, because you can't do it all alone. Not really. All right, hold on. Okay, so let's go ahead and talk about what's happening over there in Loudoun County, Virginia. Because that was the county where the man was dragged out of the school board meeting. His name was Scott Smith, if you remember, and publicly shamed all over the internet by the collective left. And he was opposed to the pro-transgender policy, 80-40, that the school district had been implemented. And he was dragged out of the school board meeting and wasn't really allowed to give his piece. Now, it then came out, after he had been bashed by every leftist outlet around as, you know, just some bigot, after that, then it came out that in fact his daughter had been sexually assaulted in the bathrooms by a boy who had dressed up as a girl who was wearing a dress at the time of the assault. Now we actually have the data on that. We actually have, I guess you could say, the proof of it. We have the court documents. And in fact, the teenage boy, and I do say boy, has been found guilty of sexual assault. He was 14 years old. He's still waiting on another trial, however, because after the assault at Stonebridge High School, that boy was then transferred to Broad Run, where he apparently, or allegedly at this point, assaulted a second female student in early October. So when the school board found out, or when the school found out about this sexual assault that this boy committed, because again, he's been found guilty in the first case. When the school found out about that, its solution was to cover it up and to transfer him to a different school. And I say cover it up because the school board actually denied that there was any sexual assault that had happened in the county. Never mind that it happened under the guise of, you know, a person wearing a dress, right? They just said it hadn't happened, nothing had happened. In fact, it had. And all of those officials should be fired, in the very least. But yes, this boy has been found guilty of sexual assault. Court documents confirm that the boy was wearing a dress at the time of the assault and that it took place in the girl's bathroom. All of that was true, it turns out. And yet, so many different outlets on the internet that dragged this man for being so emphatic about the fact that his daughter had been assaulted, they're all, you know, pretty quiet at this point. Because, yeah, he got worked up listening to school officials say that nobody had been assaulted in the bathrooms when he knew better. When he knew this criminal case was going on, and that his daughter had been assaulted in the bathrooms by one of these people. Let's go ahead and put it like that. And it's like, this whole thing has been duplicated around the country. And it's considered to be problematic to even discuss it, to even imply that it could happen. Because whenever you see one of these kind of pro-transgenderism movements, you know, to try and create gender-neutral bathrooms, or to just allow people who identify as the other sex to go in whatever bathroom they want, however you want to put this, right? You always have some people saying, hey, what you're creating is a situation where, in the very least, it's not safe for women, right? It's not safe for the girls that are there. They should have their own space. They should have their own privacy. And, you know, it's just basic decency and all of that. Well, yeah. And then, you know, you've got the left and the kind of pro-degenerates who are there saying, no, that could never happen. And you see this in actual TV commercials when this issue comes up. That could never happen, and it's just bigoted to think so. There was a massive boycott against the state of North Carolina by almost every major corporation a few years ago, like Pepsi, Coke, and all these kind of, you know, trash corporations decided they were just going to boycott the entire state of North Carolina because North Carolina came up with this policy where they said that in state-ran buildings, the bathrooms of men were for men and the bathrooms of women were for women. And for that reason, like all these different major sports teams and everything, like, no, we can't go there because, you know, they have the same bathroom policy that's been the case, albeit not specified in law, but has been the case unofficially because it hadn't needed to be specified in the law for decades, because everyone just kind of knew that from the little picture that's on the door, you know, right? We didn't need laws to kind of enforce it because you had regular good people to enforce it, if you know what I mean. That took place. And you know, you have these same conversations, like as if Coke and Pepsi were just like, well, you know, that could never happen. What could possibly go wrong? You know, by putting a person who is mentally ill in the women's bathrooms, mentally ill in a sexually deviant sort of way. I mean, and I don't mean that with any sort of hostility. I mean that in the most literal sense, that the person is literally sexually deviant and you're putting him with people of the opposite sex. And it's also happening in the prisons. It's something that was stopped by the Trump administration toward the end of the administration, but still, you know, kudos where it's due, that was stopped, and now it's being restarted such that women are being caged with men who can and do assault them, and it's evil. I'm going to end this stream in just a minute, so I'm going to go ahead and give you guys a minute to go ahead and ask any final questions, and I'll see if I can answer them. All right, hold on. UNG says, I predict the left will embrace schizophrenia, and I wonder what that bathroom will look like. Well, they embrace the mental illness that leads to, frankly, pedophilia and various types of degeneracy. That's the type of delusion that they're specifically trying to promote. And they are going in the direction, I've tried to code this in many different ways throughout this show, they are going in the direction of maximally sexualizing children. That is a target, or they are a target, of the collective left. And I think parents who place their kids in any school, including private schools, ought to be as maximally aware of what's going on there as possible. I get it, you know, sometimes, you know, you end up placing your kids there, people do. But my gosh, you really do have to pay attention to what's going on. I mean, this stuff with like the trips to gay bars, and there was another one about lap dances being done on school officials at the request of school officials, and that was supposed to be okay. I mean, yes, the public schools are by far the worst, but public schools aren't entirely safe either. You really have to pay attention. Okay, let's see. Let's see. Das Chungus has an issue. He says, maybe it's about time women take their safety seriously instead of calling men racists and bigots for worrying for the well-being and safety of women and children. Well, yes, except for I don't think that all women are the women who are looking at men and screaming racist. Although I will admit that if you, it's ironic here, but if you had a situation where women didn't vote or couldn't vote, women would be safer. Because you wouldn't have such policies as like the transgender policy, because when you look at, for example, actual voting records, you see that it's actually very often there is a disparity there in which women are more likely to vote for leftist policies, and because they're drummed up in kind of exotic emotionalism that you don't see in more reasoned debate. So that is true. However, it's not all women who are screaming that men are racists and bigots. So I thought I'd go ahead and say that. Let me see. Let me go ahead and get rid of this guy. Okay. Okay, guys, I think I'm going to go ahead and wrap up. I think it's been a good night, and I don't see any other big comments that are coming in. I'm sorry, any big questions that are coming in. So I am going to go ahead and end this. But thank you so much for joining me. As always, it's been fun, and I'll do it again next week. And I do want to thank those of you who donate to this show, because you literally make it possible for me to do this each week. And I'm increasingly doing the shorter videos in the middle of the week too. I hope you've been enjoying those. So thank you so much for all of that. All right.